So the teaching that I've been doing in these last few months come a lot out of my own personal practice and my own explorations. I think most of you probably remember who've been at previous gatherings here in the last few months know that I had about a month on retreat in February and early March. And also I've been keeping with a fairly strong daily practice, trying to have 5 sessions a day of formal practice, which has been quite helpful and inspiring, and finding other times to do retreats. I had a retreat that I was able to attend about 2 weeks ago for a week. And the theme that I explored the last 2 times I was here were themes that came out of this retreat about, I called the theme doing and not doing. And I was particularly interested in how our practice evolves over time towards a kind of deep non-doing. And it's really, as it were, a decommissioning or putting out of operation of the usual sense of self. So there's a kind of deep non-doing that can emerge in practice when I'm not even meditating anymore, but the process is still occurring. Something deeper is occurring. And you may remember from the talks that I found resonance with this notion in multiple spiritual traditions, and particularly the Taoist tradition, where there's the concept of wu wei, a sense of non-action or non-exertion, as it's often translated, which points to something similar, that this is taken to be an expression of spiritual maturity, that there is a way that one can bring this non-doing into meditation as well as into the flow of daily life. And related to this sense of non-doing is this sense of letting go of the sense of the self as the agent, as the one who has to, in a sense, keep track of things, to perhaps control or make sure that the agenda is met. And there's some kind of letting go of that, which I think we all experience at different times. But this can be also a process that opens up in our practice, both, again, in formal meditation and in the flow of daily life. And it's been very interesting to me. And I think we can see that related to this really resting in something other than our usual sense of self and agency, there can be another quality, which is really another dimension of this process, which we can call faith or confidence or trust in something that we might call deeper or greater than ourselves. And this is the theme I want to explore tonight. I want to explore the theme of trust or faith or confidence. And for many of us, the word faith may have connotations related to dogmatic dimensions of religion, which render the term unusable, shall we say. And so we may prefer words like faith or confidence. So what I want to do is to explore some of this quality. I want to explore this quality of trust or confidence or faith, first to contextualize it in terms of the challenges that we might see in terms of a sense of faith or confidence or trust. and then point to how it's explored and explicated in the teachings of the Buddha. Do that fairly briefly. Explore also how faith develops. Some of the more beginning expressions of faith or confidence or trust, and how it matures, what it looks like as it becomes more mature. And finally, I want to point to ways that we can practice to explore this quality. And I'll be pointing to several forms of practice, which I hope that many of you want to explore in the next week. You know, I usually like to do two sessions in a row so that I can give something to give a practice in between the sessions. But that was my original intention. But then my retreat came up. I was originally going to meet again, I think, on the, I don't know what day it was, the end of May. I think, but it didn't work out. So here I am, separated by a few weeks, but it'll be okay. So again, as I mentioned, we often have negative connotations around faith that may be related to our religious upbringing. And I wanted to show a short video which expresses one way that this kind of dogmatic sense of faith may be experienced. So I'm going to do work with this screen share, and we'll show a video that lasts just for about a minute. And this is actually from, it shows Darth Vader's views about faith. Okay, so here we go. Let's see if I can make this work. Okay. So let me know if there's any problem, but hopefully this is okay.
Gesture. No matter what technical data they've obtained,
this station is now the ultimate power in the universe. I suggest we use it.
Don't be too proud of this technological terror you've constructed. The ability to destroy a planet is insignificant next to the power of the Force.
Don't try to frighten us with your sorcerer's ways, Lord Vader. Your sad devotion to that ancient religion has not helped you conjure up the stolen data tapes, or given you clairvoyance enough to find the rebels' hidden fort.
I find your lack of faith disturbing.
Enough of this. Vader, release him.
As you wish.
So I don't usually show Darth Vader. Did you like that? That was what we might call a sense of faith that many of us may find negative based on force. And anyway, I won't say more. If we want to explore that, we can bring it up in the discussion. So, but it's a question. Really, what does this faith or confidence or trust mean? And in particular, how do we hold this faith in a world which has so much pain and so much difficulty? You know, one way that we can point to the faith or trust or confidence is to say something like, at the deepest levels of human nature, there is wisdom, compassion, love, loving kindness, whatever words we use. But how can we hold that in the midst of everything, in the midst of the daily news? You know, I was thinking of some of the last words that we have from Anne Frank. This is a well-known passage that she wrote in her diary about a month before she was arrested with her family and sent to the concentration camp. So this is what she wrote. It's difficult in times like these. Ideals, dreams, and cherished hopes rise within us only to be crushed by the grim reality. It's a wonder I haven't abandoned all my ideals. They seem so absurd and impractical. Yet I cling to them because I still believe, in spite of everything, that people are truly good at heart. From 1944. And we may also maybe hold as a belief or hold as an intuition something about the deep goodness of human beings. But how do we continue with that in the face of the massive levels of violence in our country and many, many parts of the world? You know, in terms of the polarized political situation, the climate emergency, I could go on, or I don't need to go on, is maybe another way to say it, right? And so we can also ask, how do I keep that sense of trust and confidence in relationship to my own ups and downs, my own, at times, self-doubts, or my own self-criticism, self-judgments? How do I hold that sense of faith? Does it waver for me? So again, I'll look briefly at the traditional teachings, then look more developmentally at how faith emerges and matures, and then point to some practices. So the main term in the teachings of the Buddha is sadha, S-A-D-D-H-A. And there are multiple meanings in the teachings of the Buddha. This sense of faith or confidence or trust has multiple meanings. Sometimes it means a confidence, a believing, we might say, in the Buddha's awakening, in the figure of the Buddha, in the teachings of the Buddha. Sometimes it's about a kind of conviction that the path laid out can lead to awakening. Sometimes it's understood as that. Along with that, the energy to follow the path of practice and to really engage in it very, very fully. And that can be a kind of a deep confidence. And I can remember in my own experience, one of my initial experiences of a kind of trust and faith came after my first 2-week retreat at the Insight Meditation Society. I was in my mid-20s, and there was something for me so profound about it. I went into states of mind and body and heart that I had never known before. And for whatever reason, something in me felt like there was a kind of a homecoming. This was like almost 45 years ago. And there was some deep confidence that I could feel that I think actually has never really wavered, I would say. So there can be that sense of the path, or it can be framed in terms of confidence in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. Sometimes it's understood as the ability to go beyond difficulties or hindrances. And faith is probably most prominently taught, and many of you know, in terms of a teaching called the five spiritual faculties, which is fairly widely taught, you know, and it goes along with wisdom, with energy, concentration, and mindfulness. And in particular, in this teaching, faith is often linked with wisdom. In this teaching, there are wisdom and faith are linked, and energy and concentration are linked. and mindfulness is sort of like the rudder. And so it's often said that someone strong in faith may not have so much wisdom. Someone strong in wisdom may not have so much confidence. It can be more intellectual, let's say. And that there's really a pointing to mature faith being deeply integrated with wisdom. So it stops being, as it were, a blind faith, to cite the name of an old rock and roll group. And it, very good music. But I think I learned about blind faith before that retreat I was talking about. Anyway, and so, but there's a way that, we may first, and I'll come to this in a moment, we may first have a faith that's less than mature, but as it develops, and this is what's pointed to in the traditional teaching, the maturity results in this integration of confidence and wisdom. You know, we might say one term that's often used is it becomes a verified faith, and we could also say an understood faith, you know, that the that faith gets integrated with both experience and with understanding and wisdom. So what are some of the stages of the development of faith? And, you know, here you might think of what you've experienced, and I'll tell some of my stories. You know, the direction of this, I want to say the direction of this cultivation of faith and confidence is a sense that my very being is a unique expression of the depths of the universe. And your unique being is an expression of the depths of the universe and the depths of wisdom and love. That the mature faith or confidence or trust has that quality, and that deepens in us as we practice a sense of being in touch with one's own depths, or at least some touch there. And so initially, again, there may be some way that our confidence is supported. It may be that we know a friend, or we know maybe a teacher, or we read a book, and there's some sense that there's something in that other person that I want to develop also. So the faith can be at first maybe more external in another person, another being, an idea, a book. Maybe there's an experience that we've had that we remember. Maybe we were, I don't know, in the wilds and we had a sense of the unity of being. Maybe there was something like a mystical experience when we were younger. Maybe we even remember back to childhood experiences. But there's something maybe that a certain point that is there in our consciousness. How many people, maybe before you started practicing or in the early stages, had some kind of important experience that told you there was something more than the usual pursuit of whatever, wealth and status and so forth? How many of you had some kind of experience that pointed to something else? Yeah. So I see some hands. Yeah. And so we may have those kind of experiences. You know, and as we meditate, we may have experiences like I was mentioning for myself, where something opens up that starts to verify the confidence or verify the faith. You know, we start to see ways that practice gives us insight, or that we learn how to have workable our difficulties, our challenges, our reactivity, that we learn from practice that we don't have to be prisoners of our old chronic patterns. We have some kind of breakthrough. And this, of course, can really wonderfully deepen the sense of faith or confidence. You know, I was thinking of the teaching that I don't know if I've taught about it here at Marin Sangha, but there is a teaching that's not very often taught called liberative dependent origination. It's just comes from a short text, but it basically gives a second series of stages that complements the model of dependent origination, which many of you remember. I've teach on it sometimes. Is basically about the cycle of dukkha, you know, what we can sometimes translate as suffering or reactivity, that it's about how that just gets perpetuated and becomes a circle, you know, the circle of samsara, we might say, where we're caught in the circles of reactivity, habitual behavior, and so forth. That's what the teaching of dependent origination clarifies. You know, and in doing so, it points to the ways that we can break the cycle. But there's this other teaching that's very interesting that points to how we can get out of that cycle and be in another process, which actually leads to liberation. And the reason I'm mentioning is that the first step in moving out in that model, the first step of moving out of the repetitive habitual cycles is when we actually work with suffering or work with dukkha, when it becomes workable, when we can be with reactivity, maybe with mindfulness, watch it, and not get caught up in the usual cycles. That's when things start changing. And again, that can be a beautiful basis for developing more confidence, you know, and that suggests that we may also have at times challenging experiences that we bring practice to. And, you know, we might think of experiences that we've had which were important and really deepened confidence or faith because we were able to bring a sense of practice to something which in the past had caught us. You know, how many have an experience which comes to mind as I say that? Yeah, I think it probably is very, very, very common. Or just to notice that we behave differently in difficult circumstances. I remember a very strong experience I had was when I was actually driving and moving to California. I had been living, this was at the end of the 1980s, and I had been living in rural Ohio and Kentucky for 7 years. And I was teaching there at universities and colleges for 7 years, sometimes teaching meditation, you know, out in there. And I still have friends from those times that I've stayed in touch with. Anyway, I was driving, and I was by myself. I was driving a somewhat old car, and I was driving through Kansas City, and it was Saturday night, and I was on Interstate 70, I think. Interstate 70, driving through Kansas City, and right as I was driving over a series of bridges, which went over kind of partly some water, but partly also kind of an industrial area. And there was no breakdown lane. Right at that time, my transmission totally failed. And I was in the fast lane without a breakdown lane with the traffic going 60 or 70 miles an hour. And my vehicle came to a halt. And very well could have been such that I wouldn't be speaking with you tonight, of course. But what was interesting for me was that as my car came to a stop, I got out and I actually I had no fear. And I had a sense of clarity and confidence, which later surprised me. And I knew what was wise to do. And I was not hit, even though I was in the fast lane on an interstate. I think it was probably going around a bend somewhat, right? So it was a rough situation, but eventually, pretty soon, actually, I was able to invite someone to push me off the next exit, you know, where I eventually was able to get towed to a service station and stayed in Kansas City the next 4 or 5 days while my transmission was fixed. But what was interesting for me was that I attributed that to my practice. There was a sense of calm and clarity and knowing what was the right thing to do. And again, maybe many of us can, how many of you can think, not maybe not necessarily as dramatic, how many of you can think of similar situations, maybe where you had a really difficult situation and something in your practice helped you to be skillful? So this, you know, as practice matures, we have experiences like that, you know, and we can really maybe be more and more with difficult experiences and be willing to even willing to go into challenging circumstances with more confidence and faith. We can be with what are sometimes called the 8 worldly winds, you know, pleasure and pain, praise and blame, gain and loss, fame and disrepute. In other words, these are the experiences which knock us off center. And we may have increasing confidence or faith when those come up. And I think that as we work with those, it's also linked with what develops as confidence and faith get more mature. It turns into something like a quality of equanimity, of balance, of centeredness that's increasingly there. You know, I was thinking some of the qualities of equanimity, I think, are also the qualities of mature faith or confidence. There's a kind of unshakability or increasing unshakability, a balance, some wisdom and understanding, a groundedness, and also a responsiveness that can be there. As the practice matures, we start touching some of our depths. And we may have a more and more of a sense that at my own depths, I touch what the teacher Ram Dass called loving awareness. That I can touch something like loving awareness, whatever we call it. I can touch a deep awareness which goes beyond myself. And I can know that this is more basic to my being than my own limited sense of self, my usual habitual self. Not that they're disconnected, you know, but I can have more of a sense that, you know, as I deepen, and these are some of the deeper places in the development of consciousness of faith, that in a sense I am this deep, transpersonal, loving awareness unfolding and coming to know itself. And that can get deeper and deeper, that kind of confidence. So I think the practice points towards that. And as that deepening occurs, we also can be increasingly even in very intense and difficult situations. And that, you know, that confidence can still be there. I wanted to read one more passage, which almost like is a counterpart of the one from Anne Frank. This is from a woman named Etty Hillesum. Anyone know Etty Hillesum's work? So several of you do. She was a young woman, you know, maybe 10 years older than Anne Frank. So she was in her 20s. She was a Jewish woman living in Amsterdam during the Nazi occupation in the early 1940s. She kept a diary, and she eventually was killed at Auschwitz. But she kept a diary, and I wanted to read a passage because the diary is pretty amazing because it shows her as a more superficial young woman at the beginning, but something deepens and deepens and deepens. And here is, I think, a very powerful, mature expression of confidence or faith, even in horrific circumstances. The misery here, she's talking about being, I think this was at a transit camp. It was not a death camp, but it was a transit camp still in the Netherlands. The misery here is quite terrible, and yet late at night when the day has slunk away into the depths behind me, I often walk with a spring in my step along the barbed wire. And then time and again, it soars straight from my heart. I can't help it. That's just the way it is. Like some elementary force, the feeling that life is glorious and magnificent, and that one day we shall be building a whole new world. Against every new outrage and every fresh horror, we shall put up one more piece of love and goodness, drawing strength from within ourselves. We may suffer, but we must not succumb. And if we should survive unhurt in body and soul, but above all in soul, without bitterness and without hatred, then we shall have a right to a say after the war. So that confidence or faith, even possible in those extreme circumstances, you know, and we can see that in many testaments, you know, from any situation of oppression. We can see those examples. So how to practice? I'm going to give pretty briefly three ways of practicing and hope that you may feel called to work with this sense of faith and confidence in the next week or weeks. The first is to look at when doubt arises. Study your doubt. When the doubt in the teachings arises or doubt in a teacher. And of course, there may be actually helpful questions. I'm not saying that doubt is necessarily always problematic. And I think of the very wonderful book by Stephen Batchelor called The Faith to Doubt. So there's more complexity here than I'm going to get into. But there's the certain, even to ask questions takes a certain faith on that reading. And so, but to study one's own doubt, particularly the kinds that feel more dysfunctional, you know, where there might be self-doubt or doubt in a teaching. Again, there's a valuable kind of doubt that can be really asking important questions. But look at the doubt that's more dysfunctional. Study it, see what it's like. Take a moment, pause when it occurs. Secondly, look at when confidence or faith or trust emerges. Study that as well. What is it like from the inside when you feel a sense of faith or confidence? What's it like in the body, in the heart, in the mind? So really invite that kind of exploration of the nature of confidence or faith or trust. And I would say thirdly, do that which you find supports the sense of trust or confidence or faith. You know, it could be maybe doing reading or listening to talks by someone who may inspire you, or being with certain friends. I think it can be really helpful, and maybe even to do it in a few moments, to actually write down, what are my five most important supports for my faith or confidence? And can I go to them on a regular basis? And then lastly, giving really four ways of practicing. The last one is if you feel like you have pretty good faith or confidence, consider challenging yourself further. If you feel you have pretty good faith or confidence, go into an area where you might be challenged. Have dialogues with people of the opposite political persuasion. Do that regularly with empathy. That may be advanced faith practice, but see if you're ready for it. Or, you know, incorporate 5 hours a week of activism on some key issue in which you maybe have to go face to face with climate issues or race and racism or whatever, gender issues. Something that has you looking at the challenges and crises of our world. And do that and have that be something that with the right support can build faith, can build confidence. So let me close with a text, and we'll have some discussion. This is a text from the 6th or 7th century. It's a Zen text called Verses on the Faith Mind. And I'm going to just read a short passage from it. Each thing reveals the one. The one manifests as all things. To live in this realization is not to worry about perfection or non-perfection. To put your trust in the heart-mind is to live without separation. And in this non-duality, you are one with your life source. Words, words, the way is beyond language. For in it, there is no yesterday, no tomorrow, no today. The end. So let me invite just a few moments of reflection. Could be reflecting on what was helpful from the talk for you, maybe reflecting on those four or five supports for your own further development of faith or confidence or trust. Maybe a question. Let's just take a minute or two to reflect. So thank you very much. And let's open things up now to any sharing that anyone would like. Could be a question, could be sharing something that you have found helpful in terms of the theme. Anything you'd like to ask or share? I can just, I can't see everyone, but I can see most people. You could either do the raised hand function, which you do under reactions. Or you could raise your physical hand. And maybe, Bill, could you look at the second page? Anyone like to share something, ask a question? Could be sharing what has helped you to develop more of this confidence or faith? What helped in the beginning? Yeah, Liz, please.
This is interesting because I haven't thought about it, but I think for the first couple of years, maybe the first 10 years, my faith came from the teachers that I was with, my trust in them. And probably for most of my travels through the Dharma. has come from my faith in the teachers.
Yeah. Yeah. And did you notice it changing over the years? Did you feel like you were, as it were, internalizing more of that faith?
I've been practicing for 25 years. You know how old I am. And it just started happening really in my old age.
Yeah.
It took a very long time.
That's something... something really opened up in terms of confidence, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I guess just being around so long with the practice.
Yeah. Just a lot of this is not obvious, right? Like we keep on practicing, and at some point something opens up without any obvious catalyst, right? It can be like that. Same thing with, I think, all aspects of our deepening of practice, yeah. Thanks, Liz. Barbara, please.
Well, this has to do with you as a teacher. So I'll tell you about having a moment of mindfulness that can give you faith. And I had one today. It was kind of negative mindfulness, but it nonetheless gave me faith. I was out hiking after being at family events for a couple of days. And I suddenly noticed a thickening of the self. And partly, there's nothing like family events to make the self thicken. And I wouldn't have noticed it had it not been for studying this and trying to see how the self can get thin or thicker. And I realized, wow, I'm thick now, but I have been thinner. And that gave me some confidence.
Great. Hey,
but
thanks.
The thinking was all of these kind of like, well, what did I say to this person? What should I say to that? You suddenly I realized, oh my gosh, this is all so heavy.
Great. So that way that practice can give space around an experience, right? And again, increasing confidence, we know that we can do that with everything ultimately. That we can have space around all experiences, including the most extreme. Yeah. Thank you. Linda, please.
Sorry. A couple of things. In the beginning, I have to say a lot of what helped me was just having friends who practiced the Dharma and believing that they saw something in it, even if I wasn't getting it really well.
Yeah.
And then secondly, what was to see it that it actually worked, like going into a situation, and not even a hairy situation, a rather neutral situation, with some kind of loving kindness, just it made it easeful. It just seeing the Dharma really working in situations.
Yeah. So you're naming two important things. One is one I didn't mention really, which is that of a community or sangha, and the importance of that for faith. You know, it's like on a retreat or I was thinking, or maybe like even just for tonight, the fact that Marin Sangha is meeting, and you might, you know, I or you might have had a difficult day, challenging day, be a little bit lost in habits. And because the Sangha exists, okay, I'll come. And something possibly can shift, very likely can shift because of that. In the same way that when we're on retreat, I can be in a little bit of a funk, but I'm on retreat, there's a schedule, other people seem to be doing it, I'll just do it. And then related to your second point, the practice works, right? When we stay with it, doesn't always work on our timetable. You know, it's like I remember, yeah, my brother's a musician, and he used to play in a rock and roll band, and they had one song which they used, kind of an old southern gospel song, which went like this. You know, basically the punchline was God may not come when you like, but he's right on time, right on time. Right. And so that came up to my mind, that that sense of practice doesn't always happen like we want it to on our timetable, but we stay with it and it works, you know, and I think that actually builds faith, because we realize It's not my timetable. You know, it has its own nature, right? And so, yeah, just seeing the workability is something really powerful. Yeah, thank you. Veda and then Alice. Yeah.
First of all, thank you.
You're welcome.
I knew I was going to have a very challenging conversation with my daughter today. I knew this. She was very upset. She was angry. And before going into the, before calling her, I actually set the intention, words I don't use very much, and was aware of your talk last week about reactivity. And I had a little note to myself written, listen, listen, which I did for a good 45 minutes. And it, first of all, she appreciated the phone call and the way we were. And we got off the, it was a 2-hour call.
Wow.
Yeah. And you know, I'm good for 15 minutes if I really like somebody.
Yeah.
And when I got off the phone, because I always say I don't have a very good practice, I was very aware that it was because of my practice.
Wow.
And I allowed myself to, I don't want to say pat myself on the back, but I allowed myself to appreciate that there was some maturity in this practice. It was really life-changing. It was really an amazing experience. So thank you.
You're welcome. An important experience.
It was.
Yeah.
And what was important is that I could have the self-confidence going in.
Yeah.
But certainly coming out. So thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks for sharing that. That's, you know, and that just builds further confidence in yourself and the practice and, the fact that your practice is good. Thank you, Alice, please.
So mine is a good follow-up because it's the same as Vita's. I can have a lot of doubt about what I'm about to do that I think is important to do.
Yeah.
But I can have a lot of confidence in my intention. Especially if I make sure that I'm in a space that allows me to do wholesome action instead of something that might be unskillful and regrettable.
Yeah, yeah. So thanks for making the connection with intention, because sometimes, always we don't have control and we do our best. And of course, you know, intentions can sometimes lead to, you know, negative, certain, you know, consequences if we're missing something important. But still, what else can we do, right? And the intentions are like, can be a repository, especially if the intention comes with a really good heart. Like, you know, many of you maybe heard a recourse to talking about intentions from the Dalai Lama. And he was some years ago asked the question, people call you all sorts of things. You know, the Chinese call you all sorts of things. Your detractors call you a wolf in sheep's clothing and so forth. How do you deal with all that? He said, I don't really listen so much. I check out my intention. If it's good, I proceed, right? And then how do you deal with difficult things happening? He says, I stay rooted in my good intention. So it was very central for him with a lot of the ups and downs. So, yeah, of course, we want to combine that with being as skillful as we can. You know, ideally, we have both a lot of skill and good intentions. Right? Yeah, thank you, Alice. Other reflections? Maybe we'll take one or two more, and then we'll finish up. Bill, please.
Well, I just, my... faith experience was on my first retreat, which was back in 87. It was a 3-day residential retreat. And I had a fairly tough time trying to meditate. And then on the very last day, I had a sit that was so nice that when the bell rang, I was unhappy that the sit was ending. It was so calm. And so what that did was that gave me confidence that meditation doesn't always suck.
Yeah, I mean, you can find passages to that effect in the suttas, by teachings by the Buddha. I don't know if he said it quite as clearly as you did, though. So thank you. Yeah. Some verified confidence that there's something there, even though, it is hard at the beginning. Yeah. Maybe time for one more. Anyone else want to share something or ask a question? Jan, please.
Yeah, I just wanted to say I came to the Sangha because of Philip, but I stayed because of the people.
Wow.
So it's the community here for me.
Yeah. That's, again, thanks for bringing up that sense of the community. It's like, this is a group I want to be connected to, or however you express it, or I want to be part of, or this show, this brings out certain beautiful qualities, or I can see the beautiful qualities there, however you express it, that, the sense of community can be such a source of this confidence or faith. Yeah.
I wanted to have what they had.
Yeah, very good.